Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. You trust the lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we've been doing that more often as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on December 14th, 2020, from my home studio here in Columbia. Just so you know, some of the information in this podcast may have changed by the time you've heard it. This podcast cuts through the noise and gives you South Carolina-specific COVID-19 news and stories. This episode features all the action from the Electoral College meeting in Columbia on Monday. We have a meaty update for you on the vaccine that has now reached South Carolina, marking the beginning of the end, folks. Here we go. We hear from a USC law professor on his new book, tracing the history of public education in the country, ahead of a legislative session where education will be a top priority again. And we learn about how the Citadel is studying climate change. Additionally, we want to hear your stories, so we set up a voicemail box to hear from you all about your daily life in these uncertain times. Leave us a 1 to 3 minute long voicemail at 803-563-7169. Leave us your name, where you're calling from, and what's going on in your world. Tell us what you think about the vaccine moving forward and it coming to South Carolina. Your thoughts on the vaccine, if you're eagerly awaiting it, if you're still hesitant about it, we want to know. Also, tell us what you're doing for the holidays, whether it's Hanukkah or Christmas or Kwanzaa. We want to know what you're doing. If you're seeing folks, or if you're sitting tight, how you're shopping, if your tree is real or not, we are interested. 803-563-7169. Definitely make sure you let us know, because we will be hosting a special Christmas pod next week. So we want to hear from you so we can include you on that pod. Ho, 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 ho. Now for the latest in South Carolina. Currently, the spread of COVID-19 is ongoing, widespread, and not contained, according to Department of Health and Environmental Control data. There have been 4,398 confirmed deaths, and currently there are 236,785 confirmed cases being reported in all 46 counties as of December 14th at 4 p.m. Our current percent positive rate is 20.3%. Not good. There are currently 1,276 patients hospitalized with COVID-19 across the state. 307 patients are in intensive care, and 140 patients are on ventilators. Not good. We had cases over the weekend ranging from 2,900 to 3,000 cases, roughly. And Monday we saw new cases at 2,364. 67 people died on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, according to DHEC. Some dark news there, of course, as we're going through a very hard time in our state and our country, but we have some encouraging news for you on the vaccine front that we'll get to in our medical section shortly. All 538 members of the Electoral College met across the United States Monday to cast their ballots in accordance with how their state voted in the presidential election. All 50 states have certified their election results and won more than once. Here's looking at you, Georgia. In South Carolina, 9 electors met in a committee room on the statehouse grounds to cast ballots for President Donald Trump and Vice President Mike Pence, since the ticket won the state by 12 points. Now, we didn't see any fireworks Monday. Apparently, our election was safe and secure enough not to cause any protests, unlike what we've seen in some swing states. South Carolina GOP Chairman Drew McKissick presided over the meeting, which was made up of electors appointed by the party from the state's 7 congressional districts and 2 at-large seats, occupied by McKissick and National Committee Woman Cindy Costa. The uneventful meeting lasted 1 hour and was dominated by filling out paperwork.
Thank you, sir. I feel like I've bought a house.
That was McKissick after processing some initial paperwork. Our state law makes it a criminal offense for voters to cast their ballot for any other candidates than those the state voted for. So again, there were no surprises. And here's part of the action, including Secretary Cindy Costa, McKissick, and Secretary of State Mark Hammond.
Mr. President, I have 9 votes cast for Mike Pence as Vice President of the United States.
So that's 9 votes cast for Mike Pence for Vice President of the United States. If we would now have all of our electors take the blue form, if you would, again, print your name where so indicated and list your candidate for president there, Mr. Donald Trump, and then sign, and then we'll collect those to the secretary.
Mr. President, I have 9 votes cast for Donald J. Trump as president for South Carolina.
That's 9 votes for Mr. Donald J. Trump as president of the United States. Mr. Secretary, all of our votes have been cast.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you like to have a voice call, voice vote?
Yes, we would. Can we have a voice vote to confirm the results, all 9 votes for Mike Pence and Donald Trump as President of the United States? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Thank you very much, Mr. Secretary. It's unanimous.
Thank you.
And that's the magic, folks. That was it. That's democracy in action. This is what democracy looks like. Now, the ballots will head to the U.S. Archives and to Vice President Mike Pence, who, as Senate President, will preside over the counting of Electoral College votes in a special session of Congress on January 6. Reuters notes that the Electoral Count Act allows individual members of the House and Senate to challenge the results during the January 6 special session, a rarely used procedure. Now, any objection to a state's results must be backed by at least one House member and one senator. The two chambers would then separate to debate the objections before voting on whether to reject the state's results. An objection must pass in both chambers by a simple majority. If the vote followed party lines, Republicans would fail to block Biden's victory because Democrats control the House. So, spoiler. Several electors did mention how South Carolina did the election, quote, right compared to other states. Unclear what that means, but it's worth noting again that this was the most secure election in American history, according to the Department of Homeland Security. Of course, that official was later fired by President Trump for saying so. And the United States Supreme Court swatted down another attempt to change the election, this time dealing with the election outcome in 4 states by a suit brought by the state of Texas, a suit that all 7 Republican members of our state's congressional delegation, part of 126 congressional Republicans, as well as our attorney general, supported. Yes, Texas was trying to mess with Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin in what President Donald Trump called the big one. The Supreme Court said the state, quote, has not demonstrated a judicially cognizable interest in the manner in which another state conducts its elections, quote. So, looks like the Supreme Court believes that those states also did things the right way. Moving on, all things education will once again be a top priority in the statehouse next year, especially after moves to make small changes to the system died during this past legislative session. But how much do you really know about public education in America and how our founding fathers revered it so much so that they enshrined it in our Constitution? I spoke with University of South Carolina School of Law professor Derek Black on This Week in South Carolina, airing this Friday evening, about his new book, Schoolhouse Burning. This book is riveting and walks you through the role of public education from pre-Revolutionary War days to the Civil War, Reconstruction, Jim Crow, desegregation, right on up to the modern day. Now here's part of our conversation, which starts around the Civil War era.
Part of the problem with that initial idea of Congress about, you know, building the nation around schools was it only applied outside of the colonies. And number two, schools take more than land to run, that ultimately you need some money. And in the South in particular, the money wasn't forthcoming, nor was the system. So in the South, public education effectively did not exist, even for sort of middle and low income white folks. And then, of course, for African Americans, literacy was a crime in the South. And so a lot of what I talk about in the book, and I didn't set out to write a book about South Carolina, but South Carolina really ends up being the center of the education experiment. So that when the North wins Port Royal, the Battle of Port Royal here in South Carolina, they turn over the sort of huge swath of land down in that area to African Americans who basically began running a self-sufficient society. And one of the very first things that they do is start to deliver education to themselves. Missionaries within weeks sail down from Boston and New York to begin teaching former slaves. And there was just an enormous eagerness that really overwhelmed everyone. No one appreciated or expected how large the desire for public education would be. And so these little schools in the middle of the Civil War began popping up all over the Sea Islands, and folks start making their way from inland to the coast so that they can get access to this learning. So you have this society sort of organically developing education. Well, of course, once the Civil War is over, now we have to get to a more formal system. And again, South Carolina plays a primary leading role. And then a lot of those folks from the Port Royal and St. Helena's Island and Beaufort, those folks, some of those become delegates to the South Carolina Constitutional Convention of 1868. And so in that convention, they say, right, what the founders had said, which is that public education is an absolute necessity for democracy to work. And to be quite clear, it's absolutely necessary for a group of people who had all forms of learning denied to them throughout their lives. And so that convention of 1868 adopts an education clause mandating a system of public schools throughout the state of South Carolina, mandating a tax system to pay for them. And those two mandates in our South Carolina Constitution remain with us to this day and form the backbone of the experiences that children across the state receive. But South Carolina may have been one of the forerunners. It wasn't the last, because Congress demanded that all the southern states amend their state constitutions before rejoining the Union, and that they all support education. They didn't name South Carolina, but support education in the same way that South Carolina was. And so the South goes from a place where there is no education guarantee to a place where there's a guarantee everywhere in the South.
Touting the importance of this right to public education, to educate the public so people can self-govern, like you're talking about. But then you go on to say towards the end of the book that the last decade aligns better with the darker periods of our history than the brighter ones. Can you elaborate on that, what you mean by this darker period that we've been going through?
Yeah, so you take the long story of the book, it is this continual expansion of public education and the right to vote at the same time. The right to vote never moves forward without sort of expansion of education. We have a dark period in Jim Crow, but as I point out, ironically enough, even middle and low income whites had gotten enamored enough with the idea of public education that they said, look, we don't want to do away with this altogether. We just want to restrict African-American education, which is simply to say that racism was strong, but it wasn't strong enough to quash public education. But now, over the last decade, what we hear is a rhetoric and a set of policies that for the very first time in this nation's history is questioning the validity of public education itself, whether it be for poor whites or poor blacks or anyone else. And we hear and have ideology arguing that we should do away with this public education system. And I say that's an enormous danger. If this is a democracy that we built on the back of public education, we won't have that type of democracy in the future if we throw away our commitment to public schools.
Again, the book is Schoolhouse Burning, and it's an absolute must-read for anyone interested in the history of public education in America and where it could be heading. You can watch our entire interview Friday at 7:30 p.m. on SCETV channels or on our YouTube page. Well, we have a shortened business section for you because we have such an awesome medical section coming up. But just because it's small doesn't mean it's not important, folks. Small and mighty. Mike Switzer with the South Carolina Business Review talks climate change with Scott Curtis, director of the Center for Climate Studies at the Citadel, to find out the economic effects climate change could have on our state. These are effects we're already experiencing. And Curtis started off by discussing what the Center for Climate Studies does.
Okay, well, it got started by the generous donation of one of our alumni here at the Citadel, actually. Lieutenant Colonel James B. Neer was a graduate of the Citadel in 1977 and actually majored in physics. And he went on to the U.S. Air Force, had a successful career in meteorology, and left a generous donation to the Citadel Foundation of almost $2 million to start the center. He was passionate about teaching at the Citadel and also climate-related studies. I was hired this summer to kind of begin the working of the center. I've got a degree in a PhD in atmospheric and oceanic sciences from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. But we also have 19 faculty that participate in the center. They cover a wide range of climate studies. Our mission really is to be a nationally recognized center in interdisciplinary climate science. Really, we're trying to understand climate in a holistic sense, trying to better understand the atmosphere that drives the weather, but also the effects of climate variability and change on the ground, whether that's flooding or whether that's stormwater, bacteria, or particulates in the water that obviously can have a negative environmental effect. But that's sort of our vision. Our mission is really, as I said, to promote climate science through education, research, and outreach, and also to develop public and private partnerships. Our scope is really focused on three key sectors related to climate change. One is national security. The second is coastal environment and infrastructure. And the third is public health and welfare.
And all of that can certainly affect our state's economy.
Yeah, that's right. Well, this past decade has really seen an increase in billion-dollar disasters across the country, but also affecting our state, like Hurricane Matthew and Florence and the extreme rain event of 2015. But there's also drought that we've experienced in South Carolina, heat records, and even severe ice storms.
And in Charleston in particular, where flooding is happening downtown more often than ever.
Yeah, that's correct. We're getting more of these kind of tidal floods, likely due to sea level rise. This is something that we're studying here in the center. One of the projects that I just recently got some funding for from the South Carolina Space Grant Consortium is to look at king tide flooding in Charleston with satellite imagery. Use satellites to better understand where the flooding is occurring and to kind of match that up with the tide gauge information. A nice thing about this job and what the center does is it also funds faculty members within the Citadel. And so we're funding faculty on their own research. We're also helping to support cadets and students in their work. Some of our investigators, like John Weinstein in the Department of Biology and Claudia Rocha in the Department of Biology, they're looking at the floodwaters as a health risk. They're looking at pollution in the floodwaters, and they're also looking at the appearance of bacteria in the floodwaters.
And do you expect that your work will lead to projections and predictions that will assist the state, the area, the business community?
Yeah, that's what we're hoping for. In fact, I call this sort of a pathway to prediction, is how I like to see the center. At first, there's the, you know, why do the weather patterns change? We have to understand the atmosphere as the driver of all these things. And a lot of times it's too easy to say, well, it's climate change or, you know, it's global warming. The climate is always changing. It's changing in all time scales. To have a really, truly good prediction, you want to understand the atmosphere on all these time scales. So with that, we can have a better understanding of climate. And climate really is an amalgamation of all the weather events that are happening. And then with that information, we can use that for improved prediction of different sectors, the business sector being one of them, also the health sector. Can we improve predictions of, you know, when we have this type of climate event, what is going to be the outcome? Who is going to be impacted? Oftentimes, it's the more vulnerable populations. So we're trying to kind of make those kind of connections.
Thanks, Mike, for that report. You can find the South Carolina Business Review on southcarolinapublicradio.org. We got a big medical section for you because we got some great news to share. I'm sure you've already heard this, but the FDA approved the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine for emergency use on Friday, December 11th, kicking off the largest vaccine mobilization effort in our country's history. I am amped. On Saturday, on into Sunday, the vaccine was getting packed into high-tech shipping containers in Kalamazoo, Michigan at Pfizer and loaded onto trucks and flown to FedEx and UPS distribution hubs around the country. From there, the vaccine was on the move to 636 predetermined sites, with 145 of them receiving shipments on Monday and right on into the arms of medical professionals. Some 20 million will be vaccinated by the end of the year, with 100 million people expected to be vaccinated by the end of March. Now, South Carolina received its first shipment of the vaccine on Monday and expects to have 43,000 doses to 56 sites by Wednesday, according to DHEC. We're now in Phase 1A. Several healthcare facilities in the state are receiving allocations directly from the federal government and have begun vaccinating their frontline medical workers. Dr. Brandon Traxler, DHEC's interim public health director, said in a statement, quote, "To reach our collective goal and stop the spread of COVID-19, we must attend to our frontline healthcare workers first. Ensuring those responsible for treating our COVID-19 patients are the first to be vaccinated is one way of protecting our frontline healthcare workers so they can continue to protect all of us." Quote, the state expects to have 200,000 to 300,000 doses by the end of the year. So great, so great. Now, this Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine will require two shots, spaced 21 days apart. DHEC says everyone who receives a vaccine is recorded in a secure database called the Vaccine Administration Management System, or VAMS to those in the know. This is a federal database that allows the CDC and state health departments to monitor vaccine administrations. Everyone who receives their first shot will be provided with a paper card that provides what COVID-19 vaccine was received, the date and location was received, and a reminder when the second shot is needed. Now, kind of going back to the whole transportation logistics of this vaccine, it is not a simple task. You probably know about this. The vaccine needs to be stored at ultra-cold temperatures, which is why the shipping containers hold 50 pounds of dry ice above and below the trays holding the vaccine vials. A GPS tracking device and temperature probe are also affixed to the top of the box and allows the UPS to see the temperature and location of every vaccine box, according to NPR. This is not just like shipping something across the country. This is the real deal, people. Now, it's likely going to be a while before you get your vaccine, unless you're one of the 17 million healthcare workers or 3.7 million nursing home residents in the country. Following them, there are about 14 million essential workers, 9.6 million teachers, 2.3 million first responders who are next. And then following those folks are about 89 million people with pre-existing conditions, and then also the 6.7 million Americans who are 65 or older. So that's just a loose breakdown from the Washington Post on how things will shake out over the coming months. So we still need to be very vigilant. You still need to do your social distancing. You still need to wear your mask. Stop crowding around folks indoors and stuff like that. Wash your hands, get your flu shot, all that stuff. So the goal in South Carolina is to save as many lives as possible with the vaccine. And that's a reason why those most vulnerable, such as nursing home residents, are some of the first in line. So far, 1,588 of the 4,387 deaths in our state have occurred among those in long-term care facilities. That's 36% of our state's total fatalities have occurred in nursing homes. There have also been 26 staff deaths as well. Now, we might even have some more good news on the forefront this week. The Moderna vaccine could be approved by the end of the week as well. While this is all exciting news as we slowly enter the post-pandemic world, there is still some concern about implementation. Experts say we need about 75 to 80% of Americans to be vaccinated to reach herd immunity. But a recent NPR, PBS NewsHour, Marist College poll finds that only 61% of Americans say they'll choose to get the coronavirus vaccine if it is made available to them. Herd immunity, 75 to 80%. Only 61% of Americans say they want to get the vaccine. So we've got to work on that number there. So it's a bit discouraging there, but it's understandable. People are still trying to understand this. They're going to wait and see how things go with this initial rollout. As we know, there are some slight side effects, but that's just your body's defense mechanism being triggered as a result of this vaccine. So that was a lot of information, a lot of good information too, a lot of me talking, which I hope you enjoyed. But yes, there's still a lot to watch out for there in the vaccine, but it again has been certified safe and effective by the FDA under that emergency use authorization. So if we want to get back to that pre-pandemic sweet life, this is one of the ways we do that. So consume factual news on the vaccine, only check credible sources, and do not share misinformation, especially when it comes to something as sensitive as this vaccine. Welcome to our wind down section, our little break from the news. We talk about life during the pandemic and want to hear your stories as well. Tell us how you're handling things, how you've experienced COVID-19, whether you're getting tested every week or if you've actually contracted the disease, the virus. If you're working through the unemployment system, tell us your thoughts on the vaccine or give us some holiday cheer and maybe share some of your favorite moments of 2020 as we look to wrap up this year in pods. That's right.
Are there any?
Yeah.
Are there any favorite moments?
I had some favorite moments, but they definitely got outweighed. You can do that by calling us. 803-563-7169. Leave us a message with your name, where you're calling from, and give us something positive. Let's end 2020 on a good note here. That being said, AT, do we have any voicemails?
Any good notes in the voicemail bin?
We do. We talked about it a little bit in the bits and bytes of the beginning of last wind down.
Mm-hmm.
The mystery grocer who is unthinkable. Mm-hmm. Well, he's called in.
Egads.
Egad, man. Are you serious, man? And some of our greatest hopes and dreams of the year have been, I mean, let's find out. Okay. No spoilers, okay? Let's find out.
Well. After all this time, my secret is out. Yes, this is your friendly neighborhood grocer of the Trader Joe variety.
And as a bonus, you can, well, no, you're not going to get my name. You just know I work at Trader Joe's. You'd probably know it's me if you walked in there, though. So come on in at some point in time. We can get a safely distanced picture or something. Just calling in to let you guys know that testing is still fairly available around the Midlands. There's a nice free testing place at Lowe's, basically across the street from my house in West Columbia yesterday, and we still go to Lexington County, and I've been doing my best to get one every other week, and with the holidays coming up, I'm actually going to attempt to see my grandmother one more time in the Northeast. So if you want to do another guessing game, you can try to figure out what state I'm in the Northeast. So far, your guesses have been wrong. But that involves getting tested, and I won't go unless I have been tested. And then the day after I get there, I get tested again. So hopefully we're all doing everything we can do to go ahead and make sure that we're safe and that we're testing negative if we're going to be doing anything. Admittedly, I have a risky behavior of traveling so far, but I don't use any public transportation. I only drive, and, you know, don't really stop to see anybody or anything with that. Just, you know, snacks and gas. Anyways, I hope you guys are having a good one. I hope you guys had a good holiday, safely for the Thanksgiving time. And hopefully you guys' holidays coming up soon are pretty good. But since the secret's out, you can come try to find me in my store in the Midlands and say hello. And maybe you can let me know if it was a wild guess of somebody that actually knows my voice or if I was ratted on by an employee, because that'd be funny. Anyways, hope you all are good. Have a great day.
Thank you for calling, Trader Joe. We appreciate that. We were just too dumb to actually put it together, but some people did tell us no one really recognized your voice.
Our
they're just like,
had to
you
tell
guys
us,
haven't
yeah.
even thought about Trader Joe's. We're like,
Trader Joe's more like, you know, T-R-A-I-T-O-R. Mm-hmm. Trader Benedict Arnold Joe.
Oh, deep state stuff right
That's
there.
A deep cut, yeah.
But yeah, also, Joe, thank you for the smart reference there about getting tested. I just got tested again.
Oh, yeah.
Last week at a DHEC drive through in Columbia. I will say, and I did want to get to that press conference the other week and ask them why DHEC hasn't cut back on the number of days it takes to get their results back, because it took me 3 days to get my results back, whereas if I go to a certain Walgreens in Blythewood, I can get it within the day. Obviously, that's a rapid test versus a different kind of test. I think it's the PCR test. But I would still like to see that number decrease, because I think that'd get a lot more people out there getting tested if they can have those results quicker. But I agree, get tested before you go. I did before I went for Thanksgiving, and I've done it since I've gotten back. And we'll do so before I go up for Christmas this weekend. So
there's no rhyme or reason to any of those tests, because I know that Caitlin got tested at one place and then some of her employees got tested at the same place days later, and they got their test results like 4 days before she got her results. So that's super annoying. So I would like some answer on why.
Yeah, that consistency would be helpful.
The holiday season.
The holiday season. Doop, 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 doop. Honda days. December to remember.
I just used my truck to lug something in the truck bed earlier.
Which we completely forgot to acknowledge that it is truck month.
It is also truck month. I mean,
the overarching holiday season.
Come on.
But I had a good weekend this weekend. It was a nice weekend, but I wouldn't know it on Sunday because
it was gorgeous outside.
I stayed inside all day on Sunday and I was on a clean binge. I don't know what hit, but I was like cleaning machine. I cleaned out my fridge.
I got a question that concerning the fridge. Does the handle work yet?
No. The handle was broken in an ice, in a I think some sort of defrosting incident. I might have hit something against it. Handle broke. The door still
years
opens.
Ago.
You can just
years
hold the
ago.
Door. I could
years
super glue ago. It. I suppose
you could.
This is so. This is you so. Besides it. The point of like what happened here. Clean
What's
the fridge
strangest
out.
Thing? What's the strangest? Did you clean like baseboards or something?
Oh, everything inside.
Did
everything.
You clean your vaulted ceilings?
No. I thought you were talking about the fridge. I cleaned everything in the fridge. I did organize my sock drawer, my underwear drawer. I threw
Is
away
the
socks.
Sock drawer in the fridge?
No, God, follow the story. I'm talking about my cleaning binge of a weekend. We're moving from one to the other.
This story is going too fast for me.
Well, that's because you keep sidetracking it. But ripped up some old magazines and I have a bunch of old magazines, some fun covers from like the past few years and beyond. But I'm like, I don't need these anymore. I got so much stuff. So I just take the good
You've
stuff out.
You've already found all the differences in the highlights.
Yes, all my highlights magazines have already been ruined.
I already know all the difference between the fronts and backs, so I don't even know why I keep them anymore.
And then I like organized my office. All the Christmas cards are sent. Things, I don't know. I don't know what was going on. I was listening to podcasts and I was just doing things. I was on a podcast binge too. But no, I was listening to this new podcast by Vogue. It was like Vogue in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And it's like multi-part podcast about just how the 90s were just so big on fashion and culture and just all these different designers and the rise of the supermodel and how all this affected everything. And it was just
Tyra Banks-centric?
It was just fun, like nostalgic stuff. And then just really made some really good points about, you know, certain designers and how they saved certain brands and how we became better consumers and all that great
consuming.
Stuff.
Oh, I love consuming. That's what it's about, you know? That's what this season's about.
It was narrated very well. It was structured, like, great. And then you got to hear from Anna Wintour, which is always fun. She's such a badass. And then I also listened to another podcast called No Stupid Questions from Freakonomics Radio.
Yeah, which that's
just
a good one.
They just always have, like, these really great open-ended questions and these great discussions with the research to back it up. And you're like, huh. I should, like, when do you start quitting something or do your friends influence you? And it's very interesting.
Yeah.
I don't quit and I don't have friends. So no to both of those.
No reason to fix the handle on the fridge.
Yeah. I mean, the door still opens.
Doesn't matter. No one else is going to see it.
Like, I don't care.
Yeah. I'm the only person Gavin sees all week anyway. And that was before the pandemic started. I mean, he doesn't like anybody.
Yeah. Well, Meg Kennard and I did. We took a nature trip on Saturday. We went to.
You took a nature bath?
what is up with you, like, misinterpreting everything I say here?
No, nature bath is just you walk outside in nature.
A nature bath?
Yeah.
No, I've never heard that. We went on a. We went to the Congaree River Reserve, Congaree something reserve.
Congaree. Sounds like you're making that up.
It is. It's over in Casey. Mm-hmm. But it's really adorable. It's like a, you know, 3 mile loop or so.
I've been on that.
We did it's half like, of it. We did half the loop and just sat there and had some mimosas and ate some charcuterie.
There's nothing that puts me in the mood for charcuterie and mimosas like a swamp.
I mean, it was perfect out. There were no problems.
It was really nice outside. Very nice outside.
There was a little creek. It was nice. We weren't getting bit. It was great.
Oh yeah, it's really nice out there. I know that I've complained on here about the squirrel in my roof, and I would like to. Say mission accomplished. The squirrel is dead.
Mm.
So I feel bad and also victorious at the same time.
Congaree Creek Heritage Preserve. Yes. Mm, yeah. There were plenty of squirrels there too. They were free and unencumbered by the threat of death.
I wish this squirrel would have just got into the non-lethal traps and I could have brought him there and he could have played at the farm upstate with all the other squirrels. But no, it wasn't meant to be. He wanted to live in my attic really badly. And now I can sleep past 6 o'clock.
And you're keeping the squirrel out there to show the other squirrels. This is what
this
happens.
Is a serious household. There are no jokes here. And
tell your friends.
Yeah, exactly right.
Winter's here.
Except winter's never really going to come.
Yeah, right. Besides, I mean, that's why I like managed to actually go walking this morning at like 5:30 finally. It's been so
70
long.
Degrees.
65. I was like, oh, it wasn't raining yet. So
yeah,
it's supposed to cool down again this week, but. So I'll probably just retreat to bed. But yeah.
You're going to sleep under 24 down comforters.
I'm so cold.
Like, it gets cold here, folks. And then I also, done all my holiday shopping, consumerism. That's what we do.
But that's what we're about. This podcast is really about consumerism.
We're so pro-consumer. You don't even know it. It's so deep state. Yeah. But I did, right before we started taping, I got this package and I was like, oh, what is this? I didn't remember ordering this, and I opened it. It was like two Tiffany boxes, and I was like, "What? What is this?" And it was from my friend Anton, who got
so
me two
a friend.
Very nice martini glasses, the nicest martini glass I've ever held.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very affordable gift, actually. It's a very high impact, but a very affordable gift. So if you're looking for something like that, that hits both boxes right there.
You ready to make a splash? You get.
I
that,
was
that
like,
blue
can
box.
Can I have a quick martini before we start taping? I want to give this baby for a test drive. You know, it's
test drive.
I want to have
a
December to
it.
Remember. I want to just have a sip of this really quick. But I said no, no, no.
You could have put like water in it.
Yeah.
Could drink some orange juice or something.
I'm not going to christen it with juice.
You could have put some Tab in it.
Oh, yeah.
I know you're a huge Tab head.
Yeah, and I had to stop. It's just too much.
I had to stop.
Aspartame. I lost too much weight on tab, so
I was losing
stop.
Too much weight. Yeah, a real thing.
Because now I'm talking about my tab heads. All right, I think that's all we had, huh?
Well, yeah. I mean, I also watched the 2020 Vin Diesel blockbuster Bloodshot this past weekend, and I can't recommend it enough. He is a superhero again. It is ultimately all about family. So, I mean, it's checking all the boxes.
Yeah, a lot
really
of common
great.
Themes.
Yeah, really great. He also wears, Caitlin and I, we were really laughing the whole time because it's got to be in his contract that he wears sleeveless shirts in every single movie. He goes straight from army fatigues to a black tank top. Mm-hmm. Just and there's nothing in between. He's just tanking it for life, you know. His arms probably have their own contract.
Everything must be clothing must be as masculine as possible, please. Yeah.
Come on, very masculine. And these pythons, they gotta breathe, baby. take it out.
Sounds like a wonderful holiday flick for everyone.
Oh yeah, it's a Hanukkah movie actually.
Oh, right,
rare Hanukkah flick.
Yeah. Well, let us know how you're celebrating this December to Remember and this winter sales event, certified pre-owned winter sales event. You can leave us a message at 803-563-7169 or a review on iTunes. And you can also stay up to date on the latest news on SCETV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. Also, consider becoming an ETV member. Membership starts at just $40, and if you pledge at the $75 level, you get access to PBS Passport and all the great programming your donation helps support. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina.
I want them to want to cry and dance. Mark.